Out of all the people getting subpoenaed by the January 6th committee, Jeffrey Clark is going to be the one to watch. He was the DOJ nobody who Trump promised he'd make acting attorney general if he helped Trump overturn the 2020 election. It's one of the many reasons why the committee's legally requesting some quality time with Clark, and this isn't going to be any playdate. Reading from the letter the committee sent to Clark, the Select Committee's investigations revealed credible evidence that you attempted to involve the Department of Justice in efforts to interrupt the peaceful transfer of power. You proposed that the department send a letter to state legislators in Georgia and other states suggesting that they delay certification of their election results and hold a press conference announcing that the department was investigating allegations of voter fraud. Clark, the former acting civil division assistant attorney general, not exactly a high rung on the ladder there, was at the center of a report from the Senate Judiciary Committee detailing Trump's pressure campaign on higher ranking officials at the DOJ and otherwise little known figure in the department. Clark was introduced to Trump by Representative Scott Perry from Pennsylvania, another person the Senate committee is saying the House should have a little quality time with. Clark then became an advocate for Trump inside the DOJ, forwarding letters. Then White House counsel Pat Cipollone called a murder-suicide pact. Going back to the subpoena, these proposals were rejected by department leadership as both lacking in factual basis and inconsistent with the department's institutional role. This all came to a head when Clark informed his superiors at the DOJ. Trump was prepared to install him as acting attorney general after he got frustrated with Jeff Rosen, who was then DOJ head, and others resisting Justice Department involvement in Trump's election plan battles. It was on January 3rd that exchange ended as numerous DOJ officials, including Rosen, threatened to resign, and Trump ultimately backed down. A letter from the January 6th panel also focuses on Clark's engagement with the White House. You engaged in unauthorized investigation of allegations of voter fraud and failed to abide by the department's policy on contacts with the White House. Trump had told DOJ officials he and his congressional allies could effectively position themselves to overturn the presidential election results with cover from the DOJ. This is according to the report, asking DOJ to just say the election was corrupt and leave the rest to me and the Republican congressman. Clark has been proven to be an elusive figure for congressional investigators who refused to sit down with the Senate Judiciary Committee for its report. The subpoena from the January 6th committee comes as conversations between the panel and Clark's legal team failed to progress like legislators were hoping for. So now that Clark is in the sights of the committee, if he hasn't already, Trump no doubt will throw Clark under the bus and say none of what he says is true. Might even go with the claim, I never spoke. Clark? Who's Jeff Clark? The committee is promising criminal charges against anyone who doesn't respond to this subpoena, so let's see if they'll live up to that promise, because actually, like what's being talked about, that hasn't happened since 1927. There are actually some Democrats saying they shouldn't run too hard at the GOP over things like the Capitol insurrection, because in their minds they're saying, well, what we do to them, they'll do to us when they're back in the majority. Waving the white flag even before the battle, it sounds like, doesn't it? When you think about the GOP and Trump, it's amazing how so many top names went from calling Trump out for his lack of character, among other things going back to 2015, his role in the January 6th Capitol insurrection. They've gone from that to kissing Trump's ring and other locations as if he's some sort of religious figure. Of course, we've heard Trump speak about the Bible. Remember when he was standing in front of the church across the street from the White House when he proclaimed the Bible to be a good book? Then there was a time during his speech when he wanted to reveal his favorite book in the Bible, what that is. And in case you missed that speech, it's 2 Corinthians. Oh, I know it's 2 Corinthians, but that's what Trump called it, so I guess the apostles and centuries of Bible scholars have been wrong all this time. Anyway, getting back to the Trump ring kissers, they think that what they say today will make you forget what they said yesterday. Sort of like the person who deletes their tweets, forgetting that the Wayback Machine keeps them alive and very well. There's Mike Pence, who was being directly threatened by the thugs back on January 6th. Well, Mike Pence, pretended to be this great defender of democracy. Truth behind the scenes turned out to be quite a bit different. Since that truth's been revealed, I guess Pence saw this as the best path for him to take now.
A lot has been made over the disagreement you had with the president as it relates to January 6th. My sources, my understanding are, is that you two have a strong relationship to this day. What is your relationship with the president?
Look, you can't spend almost 5 years in a political foxhole without somebody, without developing a strong relationship. And, you know, January 6th was a tragic day in the history of our Capitol building. But thanks to the efforts of Capitol Hill police, federal officials, the Capitol was secured. We finished our work. And the president and I sat down a few days later and talked through all of it. I can tell you that we parted amicably at the end of the administration, and we've talked a number of times since we both left office. But I believe that our entire focus today should be on the future. I've campaigned a couple of times for Glenn Youngkin, who will be a great governor in the state of Virginia. I've been traveling all across this country, helping our team running for the House and the Senate, and I'll be helping governor's candidates around America. So I know the media wants to distract from the Biden administration's failed agenda by focusing on one day in January. They want to use that one day to try and demean the character and intentions of 74 million Americans who believed we could be strong again and prosperous again and supported our administration in 2016 and 2020. But for our part, I truly believe we all ought to remain completely focused on the future. That's where I'm focused, and I want a commission too. I believe the future is bright.
There's Kevin McCarthy. Before, he sat on the floor of the House, and Donald Trump was solely responsible for what happened on January 6th. Now?
I thought the president had some responsibility when it came to the response. If you listen to what the president said at the rally, he said, demonstrate peacefully. I also think everybody across this country has some responsibility. Think about 4 years ago after the President Trump was sworn in. What happened the very next day? The title was resist.
Let's not forget about our friend Lindsey Graham, who in the past called Trump a jackass, race baiter. After the Capitol insurrection, he said that enough is enough. He's out when it comes to Trump. That was then. What about now?
I would just say to my Republican colleagues, can we move forward without President Trump? The answer is no. I've always liked Liz Cheney, but she's made a determination that the Republican Party can't grow with President Trump. I've determined we can't grow without him.
Steve Scalise also has become a Trump ring kisser. Here's Scalise responding to a simple yes or no question.
Do you think the 2020 election was stolen from Donald Trump, and in continuing to make that charge, not having states do election reforms, but specifically making this charge that the election was stolen, do you think that that hurts, undermines American democracy?
Well, Chris, I've been very clear from the beginning. If you look at a number of states, they didn't follow their state-passed laws that govern the election for president. That is what the United States Constitution says. They don't say that the states determine what the rules are. They say the state legislatures determine the rules.
But the states all certified.
In a number of states, they didn't follow those state legislative rules.
The states all certified.
They didn't follow those legislative rules. Right, but at the end of the day, are we going to follow what the Constitution says or not? I hope we get back to what the Constitution says, but clearly in a number of states, they didn't follow those legislatively
set rules. So you think the election was stolen?
What I said is there are states that didn't follow their legislatively set rules. That's what the United States Constitution says. And I think there are a lot of people that want us to get back to what the Constitution says we should be doing, not just with elections, with a lot of other things too. And then there are some people that want to just ignore what the Constitution says and do their own thing. You know, that's been a debate that's been going on in this country for a long time.
But do you,
get back to the Constitution? You wouldn't have that problem.
And there certainly can happen, but there are people out there. There was a rally for President Trump yesterday, and a number of people said, Joe Biden's not my president. Donald Trump is my president. I guess the question is, do you think the election, last time, I promise, do you think the election was stolen or not? I understand you think there were irregularities and things that need to be fixed. Do you think the election was stolen? Yeah.
And it's not just deregulated. It's states that did not follow the laws set, which the Constitution says they're supposed to follow. When you see states like Georgia cleaning up some of the mess and people calling that Jim Crow law, that's a flat-out lie. I think most people need to stand up against that sort of thing.
All right.
So who does the GOP need right now? Well, it's a voice to confront the conspiracies, the badness, and certainly Trump. Liz Cheney, Adam Kinzinger, no, they're not the answer. What the GOP needs is a modern-day Joseph Welch. Who? Joseph Welch was someone who, in full view of the nation, got in the face of Senator Joseph McCarthy during the madness he created. Let's go back to that moment in history, June 9th, 1954.
Until this moment, Senator, I think I never really gauged your cruelty or your recklessness. Fred Fisher is a young man who went to the Harvard Law School and came into my firm and is starting what looks to be a brilliant career with us. When I decided to work for this committee, I asked Jim St. Clair, who sits on my right, to be my first assistant. I said to Jim, pick somebody in the firm to work under you that you would like. He chose Fred Fisher, and they came down on an afternoon plane. That night, when we had taken a little stab at trying to see what the case is about, Fred Fisher and Jim St. Clair and I went to dinner together. I then said to these two young men, boys, I don't know anything about you except I've always liked you. But if there's anything funny in the life of either one of you that would hurt anybody in this case, you speak up quick. And Fred Fisher said, Mr. Welch, when I was in the law school and for a period of months after, I belonged to the Lawyers Guild, as you have suggested, Senator. He went on to say, I am secretary of the Young Republicans League in Newton with the son of Massachusetts governor. And I have the respect and admiration of my community, and I'm sure I have the respect and admiration of the 25 lawyers or so in Hale and Dover. And I said, Fred, I just don't think I'm going to ask you to work on the case. If I do, one of these days, that will come out and go over national television, and it will just hurt like the dickens. So, Senator, I asked him to go back to Boston. Little did I dream you could be so reckless and so cruel as to do an injury to that lad. It is true he is still with Hale and Dover. It is true that he will continue to be with Hale and Dover. It is, I regret to say, equally true that I fear he shall always bear a scar needlessly inflicted by you. If it were in my power to forgive you for your reckless cruelty, I would do so. I like to think I'm a gentle man, but your forgiveness will have to come from someone other than me.
Chairman, may I say that Mr. Welch talks about this being cruel and reckless. He was just baiting. He has been baiting Mr. Cohen here for hours, requesting that Mr. Cohen, before sundown, get out of any department of the government anyone who is serving the communist cause. Now, I just give this man's record. And I want to say, Mr. Welch, that it has been labeled long before he became a member, as early as 1944.
Senator, may we not drop this? We know he belongs to the Lawyers Guild. And Mr. Cohen nods his head at me. I did you, I think, no personal injury, Mr. Cohen.
No, sir.
I meant to do you no personal injury. And if I did, I beg your pardon. Let us not assassinate this lad further, Senator.
Look,
you have done enough. Have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you left no sense of decency?
I know this hurts you, Mr. Welch.
I'll say it hurts.
May I say, Mr. Chairman, as a point of personal privilege, I'd like to finish this.
Senator, I think it hurts you too, sir.
I'd like to finish this. I know Mr. Cohen would rather not have me go into this. I intend to, however, and Mr. Welch talks about any sense of decency. It seems that Mr. Welch is paying so deeply. He thinks it's improper for me to give the record, the Communist Front record, of the man whom he wanted to foist upon this committee. But it doesn't pain him at all. There's no pain in his chest about the attempt to destroy the reputation and the take the jobs away from the young men who are working on my committee. And Mr. Welch, if I have said anything here which is untrue, then tell me. I have heard you and everyone else talk so much about laying the truth upon the table, that when I heard, completely phoning Mr. Welch, I have listened to you now for a long time, just saying, now before sundown, you must get these people out of government. So that I just want to have it very clear that you were not so serious about that when you tried to recommend this man for this committee. But the point is, Mr.
Chairman, I'd like to say again that he does not believe Mr. Welch recommended Mr. Fisher as counsel for this committee, because he had, through his office, all the recommendations which were made and did not recall any of them coming from Mr. Welch, and that would include Mr. Fisher.
Well, let me ask Mr. Welch. You brought him down, did you not, to act as your assistant?
Mr. McCarthy, I will not discuss this further with you. You have sat within 6 feet of me and could have asked me about Fred Fisher. You have seen fit to bring it out, and if there is a God in heaven, it will do neither you nor your cause any good. I will not discuss it further. I will not ask Mr. Cohen any more witnesses. You, Mr. Chairman, may, if you will, call the next witness.
And there you go, GOP. There's your training video that will help you save your political party. At least what's left of it.